8 to 11 p.m. at Revolution Hall in Portland. All Things Must Pass was a triple album released by George Harrison in 1970, and this tribute event will feature 30-plus musicians from Portland's music scene who will perform the first four sides of the record. Again, that's All Things Must Pass, a 50th anniversary celebration on Saturday, February 1st from 8 to 11 p.m. at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show with a portion of proceeds donated to the Jeremy Wilson Foundation Musicians Emergency Healthcare Fund. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors will meet Tuesday, January 28th at 6 p.m. instead of Monday for their January board meeting.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, and it's raining.
I wasn't going to go there, but thanks.
Yeah. No, it's raining. In case you didn't notice, in case you thought there was a God snot or something, I don't know.
That was weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
We've taken a turn and we're, what, 15 seconds in to the show?
Well, it's, you know, it's KBOO. What can
it
I say? 231-8187. You know, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio show.
KBOO 90.7 FM.
Yeah.
You can give us a call. What's that number again?
231-8187. Yes.
Yes. You can also write to us, facebook.com/AbeAndJoe. Yes, it is raining. We're at that portion of the Pacific Northwest winter that's just soggy. It's just soggy.
Oh, it's always soggy, and we always pray for snow. We're so depressed we want it to snow.
Well, yeah, that would be a nice change.
Yeah, no, right.
See, yeah, see. Yeah. But I suppose we should be grateful because there's a lot
we
of places.
We should be grateful. You
there's
know,
a lot of places.
A cosmological kind of approach. Why
yeah,
should we be grateful?
There's a lot of places in the world that really wish they could be soggy right about now.
Well, that's just the problems of late-stage capitalism.
Yeah. Boy, we're already so far afield. I don't know how we're going to bring this home.
Well,
Maybe we should just quit.
No.
Thank you for tuning in.
This has been. I don't know. I think you want everything to be rational.
I do. I really do.
Well, it's a real mistake, let me tell you. It's not a rational world.
No, it isn't. Exhibit A in this irrational world, the ongoing impeachment trial of President Trump.
Isn't that weird?
It's been super weird. Yeah, especially.
Yesterday.
Go on.
No, I couldn't believe it. Here's what we'll do, said the Republicans. We'll attack Biden some more.
Yeah.
I mean, non sequitur
city. And Obama.
And Obama. Yeah. Obama. We hate Obama.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a dark skin and he's smart.
Abiding passion.
It's bad.
Yeah, I know. And uppity.
Yeah.
It's uppity.
Yeah. And handsome.
Yeah.
That's has a very handsome wife. You know, it's no good.
It is no good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super weird. For those of you keeping score at home, we are in the opening argument segment of this, what is still calling itself a trial. I remains to be seen. Calling it.
No witnesses.
Well,
no evidence.
We don't know yet. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
We've heard, last week we heard opening arguments from the prosecution, from the House managers, who did, frankly, I think a masterful job.
I think it was
great. They absolutely rose to the occasion. And I say this stipulating fully to the overall terrible state of affairs in American politics, the extent to which separation of powers have degraded, the extent to which moneyed interests have taken over the machinery of our democracy. I say this in full acknowledgement of all of that, and I still say that the House managers rose to the occasion and made an exquisite defense
I agree with you, except I think money has always ruled American politics.
It has.
You know, I mean, there's a whole myth of democracy that we carry with us as a kind of a crutch.
Indeed. Indeed we did, yeah. Adam Schiff, who's the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, who is one of the House managers of impeachment.
Yes.
For the impeachment process. Go on YouTube, go on Google and search for Adam Schiff's closing argument from last Thursday.
It was pretty good.
It was remarkable. He was arguing at that point not just to back up the case for impeachable offenses that the Democrats were presenting, but was making the case for President Trump's removal. And he does an absolutely eloquent and I think unimpeachable job.
That's funny.
Of presenting that case. He talks about the necessity in a representative democracy like ours for moral behavior, for ethics. He says, if right no longer matters, then we are lost.
The problem I have with that, and I do have a problem with it, is that it all pretends that up until now, it's been more or less moral. And I don't think that's true.
No, you're absolutely correct. But he has to pretend that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
To make this argument.
Oh, yeah.
He has to make that.
He has to say, look, it's unusually bad.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Which it is. Yeah. It is unusually bad.
Yeah. You're right. And our system is has not been intrinsically moral or ethical over its history. But there have been enough members, I think, over a long enough period of time pushing for it to be moral and ethical that it more or less works. And it requires those people, especially at times like this, to remind us of how things ought to work, even though, even the most cursory of examination tells us it's not how they do work. So he had to make that case.
Yeah.
And he did so brilliantly.
I'm more cynical and bitter than you.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Being older and wiser.
Yeah. Did you hear the part where I capitulated to all of the stuff that's wrong?
Yeah, I did. I heard that. I just wanted to emphasize how really, I can't use this word because it's the F-bomb. It is.
Yes. So look, go listen to that closing argument. It's about 9 minutes long. You'll be glad you did. You might even feel more hopeful.
Well, I listened to it, and I do feel somewhat hopeful in the sense that I actually think after the stupid behavior of the Republicans yesterday, where they spent their time attacking Obama and so on, it seems like there's going to be witnesses, maybe?
Quite possibly. We'll see how this works out. Among the things that have thrown a wrench in the Republicans' plans is the release of an unpublished manuscript by John Bolton, a former national security advisor.
Ooh, he's getting revenge.
Yeah. In it, he corroborates everything that the House manager's case has put forth.
Yeah, well, I don't know about everything, but just about everything.
Yeah, just, yeah.
The only reason I don't know is because I haven't read it.
Right.
To be honest.
He corroborates everything that the House managers have been saying. He corroborates everything that is intrinsic and explicit within the articles of impeachment themselves. So what's really interesting to me about this, though, is that a number of Republican senators have gone on the record saying, or spoken on background, saying that they feel blindsided by the revelations in Bolton's book. Now, I find this simultaneously both incredibly hard to believe, and absolutely easy to believe. And here's what I mean by that. One would hope, that any member of the United States Senate at this point has taken the time to familiarize him or herself with the details of this case, as would befit the duties of a juror in a legal case, correct?
One would hope, yes.
And in truth, quite a few of them have. But quite a number of them appear to be hearing the facts of this case for the very first time. Now, there's a guy on the House side, a former Republican named Justin Amash. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's a guy who, during the Mueller report, came forward and said he believed the president had committed impeachable acts. And for that, he was hounded out of the Republican Party. And then he finally, reading the writing on the wall, after five other candidates had announced that they were going to challenge him in the primary, he quit the Republican Party, declared himself an independent. See, this is what happens if you fail to kiss Donald Trump's ring in the Republican Party.
I don't think it's his ring you have to kiss.
Well, if you fail to apply your lips in whatever
region
or in whatever method designated by the president.
Yes.
Anyway, Amash said last week, that he said that if his experience with Republicans in the House is any indicator, then it is quite possible that a number of Republican senators are becoming familiar with the facts of this case for the very first time.
Yeah, I know it is.
And they are reportedly quite disturbed about what they're hearing, and they're coming around to the revelation that the president may not have behaved in the most in the best way.
So it's like Rip Van Winkle, they've been asleep all this time?
In a manner of speaking, yes, they have been asleep, and they have been inside the Fox News echo chamber. That's really the only explanation. If you're a Republican senator right now and you don't know the facts of this case, where have you been getting your information? Probably from a purported news source that is not delivering the facts of the case. And that's Fox News.
Well, I have a more cynical approach.
I know this is pretty damn cynical, what I'm saying.
Right? I understand.
Are you taking it to further extremes of cynicism?
I think that an evil devil has taken control of what was previously just an evil political party.
An evil devil?
Devil, yeah.
Now you're getting mythological.
No, not mythological. I'm becoming a fundamentalist Christian. This is the devil thing. I just was reading an article where this major figure in the fundamentalist movement in Florida has called for the miscarriage of babies who are somehow involved with the devil. I didn't make this up.
Well, she's also President Trump's spiritual advisor.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
And I think you can see how good the advice she gives is by watching how well-behaved Trump is.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been paying attention to this particular part of the news, I confess. But have there been...
Have
there been widespread reports of mass miscarriages of satanic fetuses? Has that actually happened? I want to ascertain whether or not she's...
How would you know percentage of babies sadly miscarry, okay?
Well, indeed. But she came out and said that these pregnancies, which were implanted by Satan, are going to miscarry. So I'm wondering, has there been follow-up reporting on widespread miscarriages of satanic babies? That's what I want to know, Joe.
Well, how would you know with satanic baby?
Well, she knows.
Baby?
She knows. So I don't know. Are there horns and a tail? I don't know.
I don't know how you could even. I mean, look. The problem, the fundamental problem with that stuff is that crazy is the rule of so many people on the right. Not the powerful, but the would-be powerful. So many of them just go for crazy. And there's no, how do you counter crazy? What, you take a sledgehammer to people? I don't know.
I really don't know.
I don't know.
But anyway, all this is to say that there appear to be, amongst the ranks of Republican senators, a number who are learning about this stuff in its full detail, really for the first time. And this is causing them to perhaps reevaluate their position. And this is opening the door, as you mentioned earlier, to the possibility that this might actually be a trial that features things like witnesses and evidence.
Yeah, I'm more cynical than you. I don't think the hard line of Republican deceit and distortion is crumbling. I don't think it is. I think, in fact, that they're just kind of doing a little agonizing thing before they betray us all.
Oh, so they're going to, as they have many times before, flirted with decent behavior before they decide no.
Yeah.
Not going to do it.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, well, we'll see, and we should know within the next few days whether or not this will actually be a trial. Now, this begs a number of important questions.
Yeah.
Like why, for example, in something that we're calling a trial, is the question of evidence and witnesses even a question? How do we get to this point? It's absurd on its face that something that purports to be a trial would go forward looking and behaving nothing like a trial.
Well, you're not really asking that question, are you?
Well, yeah, I would like to hear you give us an answer.
Because for a long, long time, there has been a struggle within capitalism in which I would call it liberal-oriented capitalism, has been struggling against a very conservative, quasi-fascist form of capitalism. And that quasi-fascist form of capitalism got control of the presidency, and in the process brought along a lot of senators who have similar politics, none of whom are particularly literate, none of whom are particularly concerned about history, none of whom have probably spent much time with the Constitution. So, yeah, this is the outcome of that, the crazy Trump. you know, they tried to get him to read the Constitution. This is a true story. They tried to get him to read the Constitution. His people, he should read the Constitution. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it.
Well, he didn't have the attention span?
He didn't have the attention span, and he didn't have the
comprehend the language.
And the vocabulary. He couldn't comprehend the language.
Oh, that's depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But it's not surprising.
Not surprising.
I mean, this guy is a stupid clown with fascist propensities.
Indeed, he is. And there's another facet to this that I find really compelling, and that is, are you familiar with a guy named Ezra Klein?
Yes.
Yeah, the editor-in-chief of Vox.com, which is a very useful website. I would recommend our
listeners.
Oh, it's good.
It's good, yeah.
Check it out. He just came out with a book called, and I hope I'm getting this title right, The Reasons We Are Polarized, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just heard an interview with him, and he's talking about the inherent inequality, structural inequality, that underpins the current political situation. He put it forward in really stark terms that I hadn't considered before. And here's what he said. Three of the four principal aspects of our government, and he's talking about the Senate, the White House, and the Supreme Court, leaving only the House of Representatives. Those three are controlled by Republicans. And in each of the elections that delivered control of those bodies to the Republicans, they received fewer votes than the Democrats in those elections.
Right. I don't know if everybody knows that, but they should know that.
They should know that. So when they took over the Senate, there were more votes cast nationwide for Democratic candidates. When they took control of the White House, the same thing. The justices that have been installed through various forms of trickery now represent the prerogatives of Republican candidates when more votes were actually cast for the Democrat in each of those relevant elections.
Yeah.
And that's stunning when you really think about it. So here's where that leaves us as progressives, that not only do we have to battle an entrenched misinformation machine, not only do we have to battle an entrenched capitalist machine, but we have to battle innate structural inequities in the very framework of our constitutional republic, if we are to actually start governing in a progressive way. That's daunting.
It is daunting, and I'm sorry that the intention of putting a colony on Mars was a fraud.
Hello? What? What?
Oh, you haven't heard? This guy had this scam going with people putting money in to get to fly to Mars?
What does that have to do with what I just laid out? The sobering reality?
Well, just we got to get away.
We got to get away. Sorry, those of you who are counting on slipping away to Mars, that's not going to happen for you.
Yeah, no, there's no likelihood of that. It's we're here for the duration.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I've gone to the stage where it's beyond my farthest fears. It's so absurd. We got Zuckerberg, right?
Uh-huh.
Saying essentially after a meeting with Trump, mind you, that he will allow any kind of lies on his media sourcing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he's all in for disinformation.
Yeah, disinformation's okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, come on.
And we know for a fact that the Republican side of this equation is far, far ahead of the other side in maximizing the use of targeted social media advertising. And this goes back to the whole Cambridge Analytica thing, which we talked about in great detail on this program.
Yes.
There exists now, thanks to the presence of Facebook, literally thanks to the presence of Facebook, a way to target political messaging in a way that was heretofore unimagined, and it is by all appearances incredibly effective.
Yeah, I think in general American people are cynical if they're at all paying attention to politics, and in general they have very little hope. So that lack of hope, that cynicism, beautifully plays into a steady drift toward real fascism.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that.
So I'm going to quit. Goodbye.
Okay, see you later.
All right.
Going to Mars? Going to Mars.
I'm going to Mars. Yeah.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I would love to hear what our callers have to say about the situation right now.
Yeah.
Not only what we've been talking about this morning, but the situation more broadly. You can also write to us, facebook.com/AbeAndJoe, or You can tweet at us at HonestAbe72. Now, I want to get back to John Bolton for just a moment.
I'm glad you got back to him.
John Bolton is
the walrus.
Right. is no progressive hero.
No.
He was intimately involved in the march to war in Iraq.
Yes.
And was among those voices in the then George W. Bush administration saying that, no, Baghdad's not good enough. Real men go to Tehran.
Did he really say literally real men go to
No,
Tehran?
Actually Rumsfeld said that. But Bolton has long been a proponent of subjugating Iran militarily.
Yeah.
So he is no hero to progressives, and he should not be viewed as such in this case, even though the information divulged from his manuscript seemingly hurts the president, and it does. But here's the thing. Bolton apparently believes that the American people deserve to know the information that he's putting forth in his book, really, but only if he's able to make a profit. Otherwise, he would be before Congress testifying, he's refused to do.
This is the American way.
Yeah. I was taught that when Congress requests your presence, that you show up.
Well, but Congress has not so far, in terms of the Senate, requested anyone's presence.
No, the House requested his testimony. They did not subpoena his
testimony. They didn't subpoena it. They could have. They didn't.
They could have, and they didn't. But that's really kind of irrelevant, right? Because if this were actually a trial, and if this were actually a legitimate constitutional proceeding, there would be no debate as to whether witnesses and evidence would be admitted, because they would, because this is a trial. And I can't believe we're even having this argument.
What
this is nonsense.
We're having an argument?
We're having an argument about whether the impeachment trial should actually be a trial. If Mitch McConnell had his druthers, then he would have voted to dismiss.
Well, look.
Before this all even began.
I mean, the turtle is obviously simply the servant of whoever will keep him in power in a terribly degraded, coal-based state.
Are you saying he exists in a coal-based state, or the state he represents is coal-based?
Both.
Or both.
Both. Really. I'm beyond depressed. I'm beyond cynicism. I cannot believe what I've always taught. This is ironic. I cannot believe what I've always taught is true.
Oh.
I thought I was using hyperbole, but no, this is really what's happening.
Okay, congratulations, you're a prophet. Now what do we do? What do we do now?
Ooh, a prophet.
What's the best case scenario, Joe, if this played out?
The best case scenario?
Yeah, how this impeachment trial ends up.
Well, you have the concept of suddenly people having a sense of selfhood. Mm-hmm. You have the concept of people being suddenly responsible. You have them suddenly reading the Constitution. You have them suddenly looking at what's going on and coming, there's a kind of come to God moment, come to Jesus moment.
Yes, and what happens? I want to hear a series of events. Okay.
What's
the best case scenario of how this unfolds?
Well, suddenly people on the right, senators particularly, start breaking ranks, mm-hmm, and say, well, you know, we ought to hear these people. That's the best thing that could happen. We ought to hear these people. We ought to hear what Bolton has to say. We ought to hear what the various people have to say. And we ought to extend this to a real trial situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation, suddenly, in this fantasy, and it is a fantasy, Republican senators say, you know, I'm 60-odd years old. I'm old enough. I've amassed a fortune in coal and oil and stuff. I can retire, and why do I need this? This is not a thing I need, so I'm gonna tell the truth. That's what could happen.
Uh-huh. And then what that proceeds, it's actually a trial.
Yeah.
Evidence is admitted. We hear from witnesses.
Yeah.
Okay, then what?
Well, then the Senate votes and says, well, you know, we have the witnesses, we have everything. The Senate says, you know what? That guy's a creep. Let's kick him out.
So that's the best case scenario.
That's the best case scenario.
It actually functions as designed.
Yes.
And he's booted out.
Right. And then we get the religious fanatic instead. Yeah.
Okay.
But he's okay because he's very careful. He won't be in a room with a woman unless there's witnesses or something. I don't know.
Well, he's absolutely not okay. But at least... At least he's, you know, more or less a garden variety religious conservative.
I'm not sure he's a garden variety.
Oh.
I think he's a very special kind of case.
I don't think your best case scenario is going to play out.
You don't?
No, I don't. I think that it's increasingly likely that it may actually resemble an actual trial. There might actually be witnesses and testimony and cross-examination and the presentation of evidence and so on and so forth. We might actually see that, but I think when it comes time for the vote for removal, that the president will remain in office and he will be able to crow throughout the rest of the presidential campaign that he was completely and totally exonerated by a jury of his peers.
Right. Well, not his peers. He's better than them.
Well, he's better. Okay. By a jury of his inferiors.
Yeah.
Completely and totally exonerated.
Right.
There's a silver lining to that outcome, which I think at this point is the most likely outcome.
What is that?
The silver lining is that if that the opposition, the Democrats, if they're smart, will be able to flog both the president and every senator who voted to keep him in office between now and Election Day about how absolutely morally bankrupt and intellectually dishonest they all are.
Well, here's my problem with that. I think most people at this point are so disengaged, so cynical, so horrified by what's going on that they're not really able to get it up to even walk to wherever it is that they vote or even mail something in, like in Oregon. I mean, they're paralyzed by the horror of it all and choose instead to be in denial. I think that's really happening. And I think that is a breeding ground for this kind of new fascism that we're seeing right now. And meanwhile, everything's on fire.
Yeah, everything is on fire.
You know, that's indisputable. And we actually have the sight of the Secretary of Treasury, probably the weirdest, has a pretty wife. That's what you can say about him. The weirdest creepo attacking a teenage woman who can clearly see what's going on.
Indeed. Have you read Paul Krugman's column today in the Times?
I did, as it happens.
Yeah, indeed. It's a wonderful rebuttal of Mnuchin. That's how you pronounce his name.
Mnuchin.
Right?
Mnuchin.
Mnuchin. essentially saying that, yes, 17-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden has a better grasp on the economics of environmental degradation than does the Secretary of Treasury for the United States.
But he's getting rich and she's not.
Well, he was already rich. He's just getting richer.
Richer?
Yeah, richer.
Richer.
You remember early on in the Trump administration when he and his wife posed with all that freshly printed money?
I thought that was great.
That was really weird.
I thought it was great. I wanted her to rub it all over herself.
I'm sure you did.
I'm sure you did. Really kinky.
There's no regrets right now among our listeners for having tuned in today to hear that. Okay.
Sorry if the children are listening.
So we've talked about the best case scenario for this impeachment trial, such as it is, and the most likely scenario, which is something like an actual trial that leaves the president in office, right?
Okay. I don't know. This is unpredictable because yesterday was so weird.
It was so weird.
It was like somehow you'd stepped into a parallel universe where it was important to take down Biden with the assumption, of course, he'll be the candidate of the Democrats. And to destroy the legacy of Obama somehow by being mean.
Right. Well, that has been Trump's objective, is to systematically destroy Obama's legacy.
Well,
but that's another story entirely. What worries me, though, but before I get onto that, there, the conceit, the central conceit that the Republicans are relying on to make their argument is that the Democrats rushed this. Their case is incomplete. We didn't hear from any firsthand, any firsthand accounts of this alleged crime. And the reason, of course, that we haven't heard any of that, and the reason that they might make the accusation that the Democrats' argument is incomplete, is because Trump didn't let any of those people participate in the process. So
well, far. It's beyond that. There actually are people who talked about all of that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people in the ambassadorial ranks and so on.
Indeed,
The fact of the matter is that the fix was in from the beginning.
I mean, absolutely.
It's like a Canadian folk singer.
It's like a Canadian folk singer.
Yeah. Everyone knows that Dice Are Loaded.
Everyone knows. Leonard Cohen. Is he Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he was an American.
No. Well, he is an American. Huh. America is, you know, like two continents.
Yeah. Okay. Jeez. Jack writes into the Facebook page, "You really think Russian spooks are better at disinformation than our own spooks? Have you forgotten, quote, we'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false," end quote. That's CIA Director William Casey, 1981.
Oh, Casey, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So here's what really concerns me looking forward over the next few months. Okay, so let's say that things play out in the Senate the way they probably will at this point. A mostly trial, followed by an acquittal of the president, during which he will beat his chest for the next several months.
I call it mostly trial and error.
Mostly trial and error, yeah. So on the other side of the aisle, the Democratic nomination process will play out, and we may actually get a true progressive as the Democratic nominee for president. Who knows? It might happen. But regardless of who the Democratic nominee is, I think it's likely that that person will go on to win the general election, okay? At which point, Trump may or may not concede the results of that election.
You know, it's entirely possible that he won't.
It's entirely possible that he won't. And here's what really bothers me. It's entirely possible that his very dedicated base, his very highly armed and very dedicated base.
And very ignorant,
will then go out and commit acts of political violence in the aftermath of the election.
You really think that?
I think it's entirely possible.
See, you accuse me of having a very dark view, and yet your view is actually darker.
It is darker. Frankly, I don't think that the American people writ large take the prospect of organized right-wing violence as seriously as they should take it. These people march repeatedly in our town. You remember a couple of years ago in the summer when the Portland police found a cache of weapons on the top floor of a parking garage?
Yeah, but you
from
know, you
white,
gotta, you
white
gotta,
supremacists you, had on hand, ready to deploy in this march.
You got to put that stuff somewhere.
I don't think that the threat of organized right wing violence is taken as seriously as it should be in this country. Now, let's look at this. Let's say that your best case scenario plays out and that the Senate votes to remove Trump from office.
Yeah.
I think the possibility of right wing violence is incredibly high in that case as well.
I don't know that it's a useful thing to speculate on, and I know that indeed part of the greatness of our surviving system, despite its real bias toward the moneyed class, one of the greatnesses of it is that it's very stable, and that stability works against crazy, and crazy in this case is represented by the absolutely abnormal and weird thing that happened by getting Donald Trump, the most ignorant man ever to hold the office, into the presidency. And a crazy person, by the way.
Elaborate.
Well, look, an argument that can be made, I think, and I think it's intellectually valid, is that as you move toward a situation where the money gathers at the top and where things really aren't working at the same time, when I say things, I mean like the environment. I mean like, you know.
Things
like,
with a capital things, T.
Yeah, right. You know, real things. The panic sets in among the ruling class, and they have to come up with some solution. And the only one that's readily available is fascism at this point. So inevitably, people who previously would call themselves conservatives, still calling themselves conservatives, end up pushing a doctrine which disengages everyone from the idea of a real democracy. And this goes on and on until eventually, in fact, there's a success of this sort of thing. And this is not happening just in the United States. Mm. It's very disappointing to look at what's going on in China. It's horrifying to look at what happened in Russia, which we, the United States, are at least partially responsible. It's clear that the forces of post-industrial capitalism really are triumphant. And all the things that we say and all the ideas that we have, which are maybe intellectually more than just valid but true, are simply canceled by power. Hmm. Power. And that power is in the hands of people who are short-sighted, are more concerned about, about having a heated swimming pool than they are about the welfare of any Americans.
And you don't think that that power is founded at least in part in the hands of legions of dedicated and even fanatical supporters who are in possession of military-grade weapons?
Well, I think that's the implicit background here. That is, yeah, that there is this army of rage.
Indeed.
And the army of rage is disconnected from any facts.
yes, disconnected from any facts, but living alongside of us. And I think really only awaiting the right sort of incitement.
Well, and a larger part of this, and I really agree with this argument, is that the demographics do not favor that army of rage. The fact of the matter is that the United States is a country evolving into a multiracial, multi-ethnic community, going back to a tradition that was blocked back in the 1920s. You know, and essentially the inevitables of demographics will capture and, in the end, force a real confrontation between, well, between the haves and the have-nots, even though many of the have-nots are actually, at this point, totally propagandized to be fascists.
It's not a good situation any way you look at it, is it?
Well, I don't have a happy ending, and, you know, I'm sorry, I have family, I worry about people, I worry about the world, I want things to be nicer. Sometimes I even will work on that, but the fact of the matter is that this is a very, 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 very serious situation, and most people are not up for it, and the way most people who are aware respond is to have a big demo. You know, oh, 1 million women in the street. Did that change anything? No.
Well, I think it did in some pretty important ways.
What?
Well, I think the president saw that, and he read the news account saying that more women marched the day after his inauguration than people did at his inauguration.
So he lied and said he had more people than there was,
I know, but I think he sees these things, and I think he perceives the depth of the opposition to him.
I don't think this... I think he's crazy. See, I actually think he's psychiatrically... certifiable.
Is that your professional medical opinion?
That, well, I'm not a medical doctor, but I play one on TV. yeah, that's my medical opinion.
Yeah, are you? Never mind. All right, let's take care of a little business, and we'll get back to this because I find this compelling and terrifying. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Alternative Radio, we hear from Reverend William Barber, the chairperson of NAACP's Legislative Political Action Committee on Why Iowa Matters. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein continues with his daily impeachment update. At 11 on Stage and Studio, D-May talks to pianist and composer David Ornette Cherry for an in-depth look at his music and new compositions for his upcoming CD release. And on 11th, Art Focus at 11:30, Joseph Galavan interviews Laura Muller, art curator at Portland Japanese Garden, about Spirits Rising, Hiroshima, by photographer Ishuichi Miyako. Apologies for pronunciation.
Well, you did pretty good.
Okay. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. Do you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming? Then download our mobile app today. All this and more on your community-supported radio station, KBOO.
Yeah, you know what I sort of wish we were mainstream radio. Not just because that we'd be paid, which is a good reason, and not just because we'd have a huge audience, but because we would have people who would challenge us.
Yeah,
and I don't feel that we're adequately challenged because
I think a number of our callers challenge us on a regular basis.
Well, but mostly on left-wingy things.
Yeah, but that's legit.
Well, left-wingy things are nobody.
That's legit.
It's legit, but it doesn't matter.
But it does.
Okay.
All right.
Was that a sub Rosa? Yeah, but it does.
Yeah, let's get back to the topic at hand. Okay. Last spring, ABC News. Conducted an investigation into acts of violence connected to the president and his rhetoric.
Yes.
And what they found was pretty surprising. They found 36 cases in which the president was tied directly to the act of violence committed in the public. And I'm going to quote from the article. The 36 cases identified by ABC News are remarkable in that a link to the president is captured in court documents and police statements under the penalty of perjury or contempt. So here's people who have gone and committed violence against their fellow citizens and copped to it in court documents or police statements, copped to the fact were acting in connection with something the president did or said. That is remarkable. Now, the same study, the same piece of reporting says ABC News could not find a single criminal case filed in federal or state court where an act of violence or threat was made in the name of President Barack Obama or President George W. Bush. So we are seeing acts of violence explicitly tied to the president's rhetoric being committed now during what is a period of relative calm, believe it or not. Now, I put it to you and to our listeners. Imagine a situation where the president is removed from office by the Senate, or the president loses a close or contested national election in November.
Next year.
Of this year.
It's oh, yeah.
It's 2020.
Yeah, 2020. Yeah,
this yeah is we are on the radio and not TV.
You sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Now, so I just imagine
so
this.
So all this makeup I put on was for naught.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.
So this is, imagine that. We have violence happening now explicitly tied to the president. Imagine what might occur in either one of those situations.
I'm not sure that it's useful to speculate on the potential violence of the ill-advised
really?
And ill-aware fascist
I think
public.
It's derelict not to consider it.
Huh. Well, then you know what we are.
What are we?
We can't say it.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. So you disagree with me. You disagree with me that domestic violence, as it were, that's not the right term for it. What is the right term? Political violence.
Yeah, it's political violence.
Yeah. You don't think that's really something we ought to worry about?
Well, I think it's something to worry about, but I'm not sure there's much to be done about it. I mean, I really don't think the United States authorities are of a unified mind against violence. I really don't think that's true.
No, most definitely not.
So there's that. Then there's the fact that most people were brought up in a mythological America, a fantasy land. And even as they are systemically and systematically being removed from any potential wealth and power for the majority of them, the great majority of them, they persist in their fantasies. You know, we all believe that somehow it's going to become all right. Somehow. And I'm the wrong person. I'm the wrong person for hope on this situation. I'm really, really disturbed. I look at the Democrats and their their bungling manner of conducting a choice for their presidential candidates, and I can't believe what's going on there.
Really? I've been encouraged by it lately.
Why? Well, how can it be that you are encouraged and I'm not? What's going on?
Because
there?
A bona fide Democratic socialist, Bernie Sanders, not only raised by a significant margin the largest number of money in the last quarter, all from small individual donors.
Well, he's always been good at that.
And now has, in now two major nationwide polls, has a substantial lead going into next week's Iowa caucus.
Well, look, I've been a dark-minded person for years. So maybe you should just invalidate my grumpy, sad view of the world and say everything's going to be fine.
Well, I try to do that every week, Joe.
Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, I don't come here.
You're really my therapist.
Yeah, I don't.
I come down here. I should be paying you. What?
I don't do this show to advocate progressive values. I do it to keep you from jumping over the brink.
That makes me feel really good.
I'm here for you, man. let's go to the phones.
Yeah, let's go to the phone.
John, good morning.
We've prattled on enough. Hey, John. Yeah, welcome to the show. Are you going to cheer us up?
Probably not.
Oh man.
Good morning. You know, there's all kinds of things I could talk about, but let me go ahead and focus on KABU since we're on KABU. You and others have been warning us of creeping fascism for lots of years, and I agree with you. But KABU is mostly radio, mostly music that doesn't warn us of this. And I would prefer KABU to be mostly talk radio and informational shows and repeat them. If you know, there's been shows that were just blew me away. Interview with the guy that wrote Code Red.
Code Red, I think.
Yeah, about the ability for these Republican-owned companies to count the votes, to flip the switch and change an election at will. So they have gerrymandering, they have purge voting, they have all these different techniques, at their calling, they can flip the switch, and they don't even have to rely on the more difficult techniques. And I heard that interview, and it blew me away, and I went and got the book. And, that should have been repeated over and over. It was such a...
So, wait, I can cut to the chase. You're saying that the whole business of presenting a cultural mix of music and other things like that should be discarded in favor of a constant screed against the system?
Well, when the system's falling, I was raised by a guy, my father was an NRA member, and I looked at his magazine, and it was warning the Democrats are going to take our guns away, decades ago when I was little.
Yeah.
And propaganda at the church I went to in the form of a little comic book denouncing Democrats or the left. And
really? Really?
Oh, yeah. People think this... it's accelerated recently, but it's been going on for a long time.
So you're saying we should be a propaganda arm for the left, kind of?
We should be a propaganda arm for the truth, not the left, the truth.
Okay.
And playing, I like most of the music on KBOO. And in fact, I was home alone on New Year's Eve, and the dance music they were playing was out of this, it was fantastic. But I'm not saying we shouldn't have music, but it shouldn't be... three-fourths music, and then you get a really good interview, and you never hear it again. Anyway,
a couple of things. You do know that we're on the net, and you can go anywhere in there and find anything that's been on this station for the last, month or two?
Longer than that.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to help you find material to fit your mood. Okay.
Well, I'm aware of that, except that I'm kind of a poor guy without much access to the net.
Sure.
Okay, that's true. I think we all should, by constitutional right, have our own net source.
Yeah, I would agree. But listen, I hear what you're saying. I'm glad that you find the political and news programming on KBOO to be compelling. It's nice to hear.
Well, it tries to tell the truth, unlike the right,
But I also think that the musical offerings on this station are a welcome counterweight to all of the news and political programming.
Well,
honestly.
Yeah. I think the balance is decent. And I think that it's mistaken to say, okay, we're just going to do political news and that's going to work.
I'm not talking about completely changing it. I'm talking about...
Tweaking the balance a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I will tell those people, whoever are in charge, that they should change it.
Hey, thank you for the call and thank you for listening.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
You too. Let's go to Joseph. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I disagree. I think that we should have more music, and we should have more pointed political music, or songs that say "Cool, Stop the Rain." Stuff that's topical that we could groove to, and you don't really have to talk. There's way too much talk in this world. Anyway, a political strategy question: would it work to jump ship in the primaries, register Republican, and vote against Donald Trump to undermine his support base?
No.
Does that work?
No, and here's why. The reason now that, for example, the United States Senate is so craven in its undying support of Trump is because they realize that there exists a section of the electorate that is ride or die for Trump and is all in for him, and they are the ones that gave him the Republican nomination and later propelled him to the presidency. So I think they exist in such numbers, especially in the context of a primary election, that we would have to marshal progressives and liberals to do what you're saying on a huge, huge scale to have any sort of impact.
And we would have to.
And
have
in the right states.
Right, and we'd have to have a charismatic leader that somehow pleased the middle ground and the left. And I don't see that happening very easily.
Like Oprah?
Thank you.
Yeah, Oprah. Hey, if she ran,
hey, thanks
she'd
for the call.
Win.
Appreciate it.
She'd probably win.
Thank you for the call. Interesting question. I like the out of the box thinking on tactics, but I don't think it's feasible. Who's next? Danny. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to harangue on you guys a little bit, but not too much. But
okay.
One of the things I've got a real issue with in this whole business of politics and where we're at with the Democrats and the liberals and the progressives is this whole business of parity test. People say it all the time, but I believe it's true. give you an example. The other day, Elizabeth Warren took on Bernie for saying that a woman couldn't be elected. I don't know when it was, how long ago it was, but what purpose did it serve except to divide us? And I think that the righties are very, very good at dividing us.
Look, whatever they do,
they nail us to the wall. Until we can get our act together, and you know, most people haven't realized what a runaway executive can do in our government until now, and now they're dumbfounded as if, wow, I guess it did matter that Trump wasn't elected and Hillary wasn't, or was. Anyway, I think that we need to get past that and realize that the only way to achieve change is to get our hands on the power. And we don't do that until the elections. We've learned that so painfully right now.
Agreed. Yeah, you got to win elections to govern,
You've
right?
You've got to win elections, get your hands on the power, and then you can work on your divisiveness and your differences to those sorts of things. But let's not do it now leading up to it, because they will defeat us.
Well, I sort of agree. I sort of agree.
Thanks for the call.
I do thank you for the call. But I think it's important to understand that the process to which the with which the Democrats are operating commits them to exactly what you're saying shouldn't happen. And I think that this is an irony of democracy. It really is. Democracy is ponderous. Democracy is difficult. And democracy often is ineffective. It's much easier to capture the imagination of the people with whatever lying nonsense you come up with that fits their, whatever their predispositions are, and to push that forward. That's why fascism is always present as a danger, apart from the fact that its economic base is so strong.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Elizabeth Warren, I think, is trying to win a primary election.
Yeah.
And she sees herself and Bernie as the two leftmost candidates in the field.
Well, they are.
Right. And so I think that that she's trying to differentiate herself from Bernie. Now, whether or not that was a good decision tactically on her part, I think remains to be seen. But I think it's understandable as to why she took that
decision. Well, I think there's also something else going on. Bernie has been in politics for a long time. He's been in the Congress for a long time. He was in local politics for a long time. And he's an older guy. She, a woman, by no means a young woman, but a mature woman who has a good understanding of things on an intellectual level and a good way of thinking about how to solve problems, a very practical way, has not gotten the skills that you really need to be a candidate effectively in this weird system.
Really? I disagree.
No, I think
she's incredibly smart and incredibly savvy.
Oh, I think she's very smart. I think she's very savvy, but she steps into it. She steps into it. The other day, I watched her go a long time talking about her background in Oklahoma and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's charming, but it isn't powerful. It isn't compelling. It's not compelling in the same way that the same material put into a more logical and rational discourse could be. And I think that that's a weakness that simply comes out of a lack of experience.
So you're saying the female candidate is emotional?
No, I'm not saying I don't think it has anything to do with male or female. I think it has to do with experience.
I might be baiting you right now.
I think you're baiting me. It doesn't. And I look back at the last election where I found Hillary Clinton awkward, you know, in terms of her presentation of self. This is all I'm talking about. Awkward and lacking in a real clear message, and she too stepped into a pit of a morale. I don't know what you want to call it, a terrible swamp of unclear thinking in the face of a true fascist model.
Yes, and while we're on this subject, I think
what's the subject?
The subject was division amongst the left and amongst progressives.
Oh, okay.
Amongst Democrats, really. I think far more damaging than whatever schism may or may not exist between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren is the fact that last week Hillary Clinton suggested that she would not support Bernie if he were the nominee.
Because nobody likes him.
Nobody likes him. I think, evidence suggests that lots and lots of people like him. I think what she's saying is nobody in her circle of entitled plutocrats likes Bernie.
Right.
And that's accurate. And I think she's also resents Bernie for having the temerity to challenge what she saw as her inevitable coronation as the Democratic nominee in 2016.
Right. I think she felt ripped off. And indeed, she did get the popular vote.
Indeed, she did. And I think she has every right to feel embittered by how that all played out.
On the other hand, she should never try to dance.
I'm going to let that one go. Let's go to Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out two things that I think were sparked by the gentleman's comments about having a more biting presentation and reports about really important information. We do rely on you guys, and I know you rely on volunteers, and I know doing things different.
Wait, you mean I'm not being paid for this?
Yeah, you guys, as in KBOO, not you two, but yeah, or me. I volunteered. I wasn't paid, but boy, it makes a difference in your life and as a volunteer as well, the little that I've done. Anyway, I'm just saying that struck home with me. There's two things. There was an opportunity there for you guys to talk to how members and so forth can actually in this organization vote.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. And also put forward, write a letter and maybe get some support for a different show makeup or different tactics or things. And just before I do any of that, I'd like to just say on the air something that I know works. It's not me. It's just it works. It works with public radio and TV and very well. It always gets my attention. It gets me looking at recording something for the future. It's little teasers, right? So it would take a lot of effort on a volunteer's part to look ahead digitally to shows that are going to be presented that day or that week and spend a few hours editing and pulling out little tidbits of quotes and interesting, shocking, depressing, troubling, or inspiring tidbits out of interviews and
I think
and then put them in to every hour at the top of the hour as a little tidbit teaser promo.
No,
and I know it would take like a minute of every hour, but I think it would greatly increase the listenership and awareness. So anyway, that's just a suggestion that I know works for them.
Well, here,
so
look,
it would work for you.
Yeah, I agree with you. Here's the deal, though. In order to do that, everybody would have to have the same training, the same biases, the same ideas, and that is not what this is. Honestly, this is an amalgam of people willing to dedicate part of their time, sometimes a great deal of their time, to having this kind of free radio. It's a struggle. It's a struggle against the enormous power of the huge and corrupt media. The corrupt media, including NBC, which, by the way, created the horror of Trump from the get-go.
And they admitted it, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but I don't see that happening.
Well, I do. I just think it would take a lot of work. There's already someone in charge of taking public service announcements at the top of the hour, KBOO, and presenting, what's next on KBOO.
Yeah, we do that, and it's
you
certainly...
You do already, is what I'm saying, is it would take another person that is kind of in charge of taking tidbits from each of these shows that are being talked about and introduced and having a little tidbit like you do on the website. You have something you read that is a nice little teaser to that, and the Willamette Week or something like that, they'll have those items highlighted in different colors or maybe a little box in the middle.
Well,
of
I appreciate,
you know what I mean?
Let me just say I appreciate the ideas that you're suggesting. But I have to make something clear here. This is a volunteer operation. We do train people, but we don't have the kind of training that I experienced in commercial radio. There were people there, I mean, literally tens of them, who did nothing but billing and checking what was going on and setting things up and having producers and all kinds of stuff that this station not only can't afford, but cannot possibly organize given the amount of time people have to devote to it. We are doing what we do out of love for and concern about what's going on. And I understand that it could be better. I understand that it could be more commercial, which is what you're really saying. And I also understand that that's not likely to be possible in a volunteer operation. And I wouldn't want it to lose its volunteer aspect. That's my position. I mean, the reason why I'm volunteering here is because existentially, oh, I love that word, it makes me feel better. And I think that's why you're here.
No, I told you earlier, I'm here to keep you from jumping off the edge.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
What edge? What edge? Which edge is that?
The existential and metaphorical edge.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay. But large point. We are a lonely element in a struggle that continues on.
It's true.
And guess what it is?
It is. Apologies to those of you who were waiting to get on. I'm sorry we couldn't get to you before the end.
Yeah, I'm really sorry about that, too. But, you know, vote for us to be here all the time. And
thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
But it is still the best in music on the air.
It's true. And these are indeed interesting times. We'll be back at you next week.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society's concert series, featuring Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, an ensemble from the worlds of jazz and folk music. The show is Friday, February 21st, 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Sam Ryder has been a U.S. State Department musical ambassador, taking his accordion to at least six nations. For 6 years, Ryder has been band leader for Jazz at the Lincoln Center's youth program. The Human Hands feature the violin stylings of Oregonian Alex Hargraves. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. There is a collection box in the lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th.